This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's March 31st, 2006, Prospective Planning's Report Day. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated. He's out of Lafayette, Indiana. And later in this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard of Ludlow's Farmer Co-op in Ludlow, Illinois. And we'll check in today with Extension Ag economist Daryl Good. I spoke to him not long after USDA released those amazing prospective planning report numbers at 7:30 a.m. Central Time this morning. Stay with us for the whole half hour. Should be a great closing market report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
In Chicago on this Friday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. In the wheat pit, the May contract up 3.25 today, 347.75 the settlement price. July futures at 361.5 were up 4.25. May wheat in Kansas City at 418.5 finished 7.75 cents higher. Corn futures rallied to 236 by the end of the day at 8.25 higher. July futures at 247.25 were up 8.5, and September contract at 256 up 8. December futures at 268, they were up 8 for the day in the December contract. May beans down 16.25 today, 571.5 the settlement price. July futures at 585.5 off 15.5, and the August down 15.5 at 590.25. November beans were down 12.75 at 602.75. Bean meal futures May contract for the day 174.60 down 480, and the May bean oil at 22.79 down 38. From the Mercantile Exchange, April feeder cattle at 101.47.5 down $2.77.5 today. April live cattle down $1.50 at $79.50, and the April lean hogs were off 77.5 cents at $57.35.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us this afternoon to take a look at the numbers from the Chicago Board of Trade, the Mercantile Exchange, and USDA is, as he always does on Friday afternoons, Mike Zuzolo, Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. What a wild and fun day after 7:30 this morning, Mike.
Like the guys on Saturday Night Live used to say, wild and crazy guy.
It was a wild and what a release. You know, Joe Prasaki's on. He's kind of a wild, crazy guy anyway. But Joe, he's fun anyway. Joe's on this week. He's the chief of the crops branch at USDA. And these numbers that we got on the prospective plantings reports, we're going to have to grill the son of a gun pretty good on what happened and how they came out. This, of course, a survey of about 86,000 producers around the nation, I think. And they found just a ton of bean acres and a lot fewer corn acres. Tell me how it impacted the market for the day.
Well, it was really interesting, Todd, because the beans and the corn really traded the report numbers. You could see that during the whole course of the day. But when we talked to, I don't know, probably close to half a dozen sources today up in Chicago and around the pits, whether it was news wires or people that were day traders or option traders that we spoke with, they all said unwaveringly that they just didn't buy these numbers, that there's something amiss, that the trade is not going to take this at face value because the crop insurance wasn't figured in at that point, because this was as of March 1st. Maybe the weather and soil moisture improvement was not factored in these numbers when they did the survey. And, you know, there's even, my mindset was even gone towards the Oliver Stone theory, and maybe this is something Joe could laugh about, is the USDA really nervous about demand being met for corn and wants to ensure, you know, at least 80 million corn acres because we're running at such a good demand clip and we really need 10.6 to 10.8 billion bushels just to meet demand this year? And would, you know, being able to get corn acres assured with this report, would that also allow them to see less bean acres and therefore maybe less bean LDP that they'd have to pay out later in the year? You know, obviously that's all conjecture and, like I said, kind of Oliver Stone JFK mindset. But It really got a lot of guys thinking today on the trade. And when you dug into the report and you saw that all the major bean states saw increases of anywhere from 3 to 40%, it didn't matter whether you're in the western states of Nebraska, the eastern states of Illinois and Indiana, or even the delta states of Arkansas saw a 6% increase. Mississippi saw a major increase of about 4 to 6% as well. So USDA didn't do this in any kind of strange geographical way. They just did it straight down the line, increases for everybody except maybe the southeastern states.
And here's the way the numbers actually did come out, and I'll give you the USDA planted acres from last year first. 81.8 million acres for the corn last year. USDA's today's estimate, 78.019. I think that's about a 3.7 million acre difference to the downside for the corn. Soybean, 72.1 last year in the ground. This year, the expectations are for that to be at 76.8. 95 million. So that would be a very large increase in the bean pit. And I guess I'm looking at this thinking that something's got to give someplace, and maybe it's the numbers that are wrong, although the statisticians from top to bottom in USDA will say that they don't pull numbers and that these are actually numbers that they got from farmers themselves and that they don't really make a lot of changes. I suppose it could be a really big April 1st.
Yeah, there you go, April Fool's Day.
It could be an April Fool's Day joke, but I doubt it. We'll talk to Joe Prasaki tomorrow, actually this evening at about 4:30. We taped that program, and you can listen to Commodity Week on the web after about 6 o'clock tonight if you like at WILL Ag, but make sure you pick it up at 11:30 Central Time tomorrow on AM 580 right here on the air. Because we'll have to try to discern what's happening, but let's say that they're right. Let's say that these numbers are right, and this is what we end up trading. And then we have a bean number that everybody thinks is inflated by 50, 75 cents, maybe a dollar, at least 75 cents, I suppose, already. You've got a huge amount of beans that'll be coming on the marketplace. Most of these extra acres are in the Midwest. So not only is it a large number of acres, it's high production acres as well. So there could be just a huge amount of beans there. The question really is, I guess I was thinking about this in some way. If we have so much outside money that's coming into the marketplace, the speculative money, and they're dollar cost averaging in every day, and that's what's been holding the marketplace up. They're not likely to stop doing that, I suppose, because it's just money that's being factored in and it's coming out of the checking accounts on a weekly basis on an automatic withdrawal, and it's just dropping into whatever fund it might happen to be. So the question is this. What happens to the basis? Is it that Chicago stays where it is and the basis just drops out of bed at some point for the beans?
We don't think so. I mean, even with the funds in the market in the last 2 years, you've seen them finally adjust to the fundamentals at the end of the day, but Your question is very valid. What does this report really bring to the producer today? Well, it brings one key element, and that is this report follows along the same pattern that if you're going to hedge anything going into planting, be heavy on the beans and light on the corn, because if you're wrong and you hedge beans hard and beans go higher in November after a report like this and the South American crop, so on and so forth, what's going to be able to allow this market to get November beans to go up? It's going to be the corn and the wheat, and it's going to be the funds coming into corn and wheat. There is no question in our minds that the funds, especially these dollar cost averaging index guys you're talking about, are primarily going after the idea of globalization, ethanol, and that means feed grains. And where are the world stocks the tightest right now? All wheat acres today, if they end up being right, lowest since 1972. So where's Brazil looking at the highest, sugar prices in how many years because of ethanol blending and robbing away sugar? It's ethanol. So if they're going to come in anywhere and allow the beans to rally, it's going to be on the heels of the wheat and the corn to go higher. So hedge is what we've always said. Hedge your beans, and if you're wrong, you'll make it on the back end with the wheat and the corn going much higher than you ever thought possible.
Yeah, I really was thinking about the corn just a bit and the ethanol side of this, too, because it looks more like an energy crop like the oil,
yep,
like the soybean oil and the beans at this point. And we're already fearful that there won't be enough capacity. I don't know that it's fearful that we don't have enough corn, but there's not enough production capacity in the U.S. But if we couple that with a drop in the corn market and we have in the corn acres, and I don't know whether there's enough acreage there to continue to to meet domestic demand for ethanol, for feed usage and others in the 78 million acres. I haven't checked to see whether that's the case or not. I assume there might be, but if we have a bad year, things could really explode.
It could, and you know this, what the USDA report also does to us today is let's start out at the lowest number possible. That's what we're doing. We're saying, okay, this 78.1 million planted is the lowest number we're going to get unless we have corn planting delays, and we better not have any corn planting delays this year. So that brings an added element of volatility, but we ran the numbers straight through. Let's say that we don't have corn planting delays, and we take these numbers at face value, and using a 2.9 billion bushel demand for beans, we're looking at a 665 carryover, and that would say to us a 445 cash price, lower than maybe what people would think, but we're putting in there the element of the world stocks being so high too. Doing the same for the corn, if we use the 78.1 and we use a 10.8 billion demand figure, we're looking at a drop in carryover. We're going down to about 1.617. That puts us at a 230 cash average price, a little higher than maybe you'd expect because the world stocks are tighter. So it goes back to the element that we talked about at the beef house and at most of these meetings. Let's put into the marketing plan a very low corn LDP and a sizable bean LDP, and that way if we're wrong, we've got a back door and we've got a plan of action.
Can you email those numbers to me and I'll drop those into our newsletter for the weekend?
You betcha.
That'll make it easier. Dave's not here for the week, as you probably already noted if you're listening, and that'll just make it easier as I put together that newsletter. Anything else to add before I let you go? Thanks much, and I know you're suffering there with a rough throat. I appreciate
it. No, thanks for that. Sorry about not being there for Commodity Week, and appreciate all the good questions. I think the only other thing that you might want to watch next week is the dollar. We've been straddling the 200-day moving average, and the funds have run these outside markets up. Today was fiscal month end, and in a lot of these fund community balance sheets, it's fiscal year end. So are they going to take some money off the table next week?
Okay, we appreciate you being with us.
Thank you, Todd.
Thanks much. Mike Zuzulo is with Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. As he suggested, he was supposed to come over to be with us for Commodity Week tomorrow. Not going to be the case. He's a little under the weather, as you were able to hear. But we'll have Joe Persaki on from Washington, D.C., the chief of the crops branch. Be sure to tune in for that show. Starts at 11:30 tomorrow. A quick look at what the weather forecast looks like. For this afternoon, a tornado watch is in effect for much of northern Indiana. That until 10 o'clock tonight, Eastern Time. High wind warnings in effect for Cook County in Illinois and Lake and Porter counties in northwestern part of Indiana until 6. And for north central Indiana until 8 tonight. A wind advisory in effect for the rest of northern Illinois and far northwestern Indiana until 6 this evening. In just a moment, we'll talk with Extension Ag economist Darrell Good. University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. We're joined now by U of I Extension Ag economist Darrell Good to discuss the Friday morning release of the Prospective Plantings Report by the United States Department of Agriculture. One of the more interesting reports released in, well, recent memory, Darrell.
Certainly the Prospective Plantings Report was a bit of a surprise to the market, and since we've moved to planting flexibility beginning in 96, this may be one of the biggest deviations we've seen between what farmers report as their intentions and what the market expected them to report, with a big shift out of corn towards soybeans being planned for 2006.
Did it surprise you?
Yes, I think the magnitude of the switch. I mean, everybody was kind of on board with the direction, saying that the higher costs of corn and the good yields that people experienced with soybeans in 2005 probably would drive some shift. The talk was, maybe a million and a half acres or so. So eight corn acres down 3.7, soybeans up 4.7 million. I think by any measure that has to be termed as a surprise to the market.
And the market will take those into consideration as the trade ensues throughout the day Friday. But the longer term, it may have an impact, I suspect, on price direction.
Well, I think it will. I mean, in the immediate future, it seems like the market is taking the tack that prices need to adjust to attempt to change farmers' minds a little bit, that this big a switch is really not justified, perhaps, by the relative supply and demand of the two crops. To some extent, you might argue that the market has made a mistake in not giving the farmers the correct signal here as they went into planting time. that the differences in corn and soybean prices have not compensated for the differences in costs that producers are facing. And now there's some catch-up going on, so that there's going to be an attempt to run corn prices up relative to soybean prices in order to see some late-minute shift back from soybeans to corn. Or if that doesn't happen, and we really won't know until the end of June, then these smaller acres really do justify some price adjustments.
It creates an interesting problem, I would think, for the commodity markets in terms of outside money. The index funds, which have been primarily involved in the soybeans over recent years, and more recently in the corn market and the wheat, but most of that money coming into the beans, and many believing that that's the reason the bean market's been able to sustain the higher prices. And those who would like more corn acres then have not only to change the minds of farmers, but they have to battle a huge pile of money on the index side that probably won't come out of the soybean side of the marketplace.
That's an interesting observation and an important one. We continue to hear that soybean prices are being supported by the speculative community, basically on an inflationary scenario, moving up with first petroleum prices and then with precious metals, and with all the talk about gold and silver moving to multiple year highs, stimulated a lot of speculative demand in soybeans. And I suspect that's true. And the dilemma is, of course, that when you get back to the fundamentals of the market, it's resulted in the wrong signals to producers here, that the markets have a multiple objective here. One, yeah, it accommodates speculative trading, but prices also have to direct consumption decisions and planting decisions, and prices eventually have to do that because somebody has to consume it, somebody has to produce it. So ultimately, we have to give the right signal to those decision makers. And I think for a period of time here, the last few months, we've seen the market giving the wrong signals to both consumers and potential producers of soybeans. And as a result, we're looking at potential of record inventory of soybeans and a significant increase in plantings. That kind of seems to be going in the wrong direction.
Historically, is there any context in which you can put today's or the Friday report, March the 31st from USDA, into context with something that's happened in the past where an outside influence other than a fundamental has directed the price, and how was that resolved?
You know, really, we have a short history of looking at that, because prior to 1996, we're basically saying government programs pretty much dictated acreage. We had base acreages for all the program crops, and you couldn't exceed the base acreage. The question was how many producers would participate in the set-aside program, and it was always 90% plus. So there was rarely major surprises in the acreage numbers because of the importance of government programs. So it's only been 10 years that we've really had the market free to reflect market conditions, and I don't recall any period in the last 10 where we've seen this kind of deviation between expectations of the market and what the USDA reported as farmers' intentions.
The other important note might be here that this is, in fact, a prospective plantings report, that it is the farmers' intention, that the USDA surveyed something like 86,000 producers, and the producers generally give them an idea, but by the time we get to June, over the last couple of years, when the actual report numbers come out for acreage, those have changed pretty dramatically.
There have been occasions when they have, Todd, and we generally think you have to have one or two things or a combination. That is, you need to see a dramatic change in price relationships in order to change those intentions, or you need to see some abnormal weather that perhaps would delay corn planting and push more acres to soybeans. And we have seen both of those factors at work in the past, that the market can change the signals that it's giving to the producers, and they respond to that. Or we get into abnormal weather conditions, and farmers are forced to change their intentions. Last year was a perfect example when soybean acreage ended up being considerably less than intentions, primarily because of prevented plantings in the northern plain states, because of an extremely wet spring. So all of that is yet to unfold and will have impact on actual planted acres.
Speaking of that, if you made note, I believe on the wheat side, the spring wheat plantings were down quite a bit from last year. And the Durham was off as well. Those would be in the northern states. So I suspect that's where many people are expecting the beans to be put in the ground.
It is. And when you look at individual states, for example, North Dakota, you see a 1.2 million acre shift out of spring wheat, primarily Durham, into soybeans this year. What we didn't pick up in this report yet, when you add up the acreage of all crops reported in this particular report, and there are a few minor crops that are not included, that intentions for all crops are about equal to what we planted last year. Yet we know that there was a significant chunk of acreage that was intended for planting that didn't get planted last year, maybe a million acres or so. And so there seems to be still a little bit of acreage unaccounted for in this report, and that's not untypical. And so not only will we perhaps see shift in intentions by crop, but the total acreage number may change a bit as we get into June as well. So there's still a lot of unknowns as we move into planting time this year.
Any typical things that could be take-home messages for corn, soybean, wheat, row crop producers in the Midwest out of this particular report, or do they simply have to sit on the sidelines because it's so unusual and watch and wait?
It is really watch and wait. I think the big decision now for individual producers is, do I tweak my planting intentions? Following the report, we saw new crop corn move to contract highs, these trade to 270. Bean prices didn't collapse. They were a little bit weaker. Will this kind of strength in the corn market, if it persists for another 2 or 3 weeks, I think producers have to weigh this decision about, do I actually tweak my own decisions about corn and bean acres?
270, this is a number that we weren't sure we'd see again, actually, and one that shows up consistently over the time.
It really does. 270, 275 is kind of a target that you look for each year, and it looks like now that we have a pretty good shot at that 275 mark, maybe higher, depending on how weather unfolds here this spring.
December corn generally trading to at least that high. The previous high was 269, which had been, I think, in June of 2005 on the December contract. So moving back above that, something we didn't expect maybe might happen given the size of the carryout in the corn market. An opportunity potentially for producers to price out corn?
I think so. I mean, ironically, my observation is that farmers have been a little more aggressive than normal this year at forward pricing. And I think they did that at pretty reasonable prices, Dease corn at 260 or better. But it always is a reminder that acreage and weather and yields will continue to have a major impact on pricing opportunities as we move through the growing season. So this kind of acreage number really puts the pressure back on corn yields in 2006 and suggests that we could continue to see a very volatile market, and any really significant weather pressure during the growing season could give us higher prices than we might imagine at this point.
Darrell Good, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Extension Ag Economist Darrell Good. I'm Todd Gleason for University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM, working with the American farmer, creating products from his crops, creating markets for crops. ADM, resourceful by nature.
Well, we tried to get hold of Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op in Ludlow, Illinois, but unfortunately it seems like the power lines may have gotten blown down, or the phone lines may have gotten blown down or tangled up somewhere along the lines. They're not capable of getting hold of him. One other set of numbers that were released from USDA this afternoon that we need to go through very quickly, and there are very few changes in these numbers. They came out at 2 o'clock. That's the Hogs and Pigs report. Has March 1, all hogs at 101, kept for breeding at 101, kept for marketing at 101 as well. And the guesses for the average guess were at 101.5, 101, and 101.5. So those numbers shouldn't have any impact really on the trade Sunday evening or Monday morning at the Mercantile Exchange. Now with us to take a look at the regional newscast is our news staff.
And with this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. Testimony has wrapped up for the week at the Maurice Legrone Jr. murder trial in Bloomington. During testimony today, defense witnesses described seeing Legrone and the mother of the children he's accused of drowning wearing wet clothes after the youngsters were pulled from Clinton Lake. Earlier, prosecution witnesses had said the pair appeared dry or that they couldn't tell for sure. Black Beauty Coal Company plans to close its Riola portal operations near Catlin in Vermilion County, Illinois, this summer, but it's uncertain how many of the people working at the coal mining complex will lose jobs. That's because the company says many of those who work at Riola will be offered jobs at other Black Beauty operations, including the nearby Vermilion Grove portal at Georgetown. Black Beauty says the higher sulfur coal mined at Riola is losing favor with power companies. The future is uncertain for the 700 or so workers at the Delphi plant in Anderson, Indiana. It's on a list of 21 plants the company plans to close or sell in its bankruptcy reorganization plan. Delphi says it will keep its Kokomo plant, which employs about 5,000, but the plant could face some restructuring. For the first time in decades, all of Indiana will go on daylight saving time with most of the rest of the nation this Sunday. But residents in 8 Indiana counties will not move their clocks forward this Sunday. Instead, they'll be officially switching from the Eastern to the Central time zone, so they won't have to reset their clocks until fall. Those counties are Stark and Pulaski in northwestern Indiana, and Davis, Du Bois, Knox, Martin, Perry, and Pike counties in the southwest. Ailing Western Illinois Congressman Lane Evans has endorsed a longtime aide to be his successors in Illinois' 17th District. A spokesman for the Rock Island Democrat says Evans has tapped 57-year-old Phil Hare of Rock Island to run for his seat in November against Republican Andrea Zinga. Democratic precinct committeemen in Evans' district have the final say in picking a successor. The congressman announced this week he won't be running for health reasons. Evans has long suffered from Parkinson's disease. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at lincolnlandagrienergy.com.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is WILL AM 580. Joined now by the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center at the Illinois State Water Survey right here in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you, Steve Hilberg.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about the weather. Looks like we've got lots of fun and windy weather and rough weather around the Midwest.
Yeah, we do. It's been quite a week of contrast. We started out the week, of course, with snow showers and colder than normal weather early in the week and last weekend, and then yesterday we saw temperatures well into the 70s, and following that up today with 70-degree readings, got a pretty strong low, as you might expect, rotating and spinning across the upper Great Lakes and producing the windy conditions today. And it looks like we'll have pretty nice conditions through tomorrow as well. But we're in a pretty fast, active weather pattern, so it looks like we'll be in for some more rain by Sunday and then again once or twice next week.
So here it's 75 degrees outside the studios, unofficial, I suppose, of the WILL studios here on campus. Can we expect that kind of high again tomorrow?
Might be just a bit cooler tomorrow. I don't think we'll see quite the 70s, but I think temperatures over the next week or so will tend to be near to above average. And we're going to, 70s are spoiling us a little bit. Normal highs for this time in March are about mid-50s with normal lows in the mid-30s. So we're around about 20 degrees above average. So even 60s tomorrow would be about 10 degrees above normal, and that would be most welcome.
And then I would like you to be the definitive person on this question for the Midwest, and at least for the upper part of Illinois. Is it still dry there, or are they ready for the growing season?
Well, I would think the topsoil is probably it is in pretty good shape up there. If you look at the upper 12 inches of soil that the recent rain we've had in March and even yesterday, the heaviest rain actually was in western Illinois, just north of Quincy and up through northwestern Illinois. I think your topsoil is in pretty good shape. It's whether or not we can get moisture and water down to the lower levels of the soil over the next few weeks. The five-day outlook from the Hydrologic Prediction Center is forecasting another inch to an inch and a half of rain for northwestern Illinois. So if we keep getting these weather systems through here, they may maybe in pretty good shape. The question will be, you know, after May, June, can we keep the rain coming?
We appreciate you being with us today.
All right, Todd.
Steve Hilberg is with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center at the Illinois State Water Survey here in Champaign County. That's this Friday edition of your Closing Market Report. Be sure to tune in tomorrow morning at 11:30 a.m. for Commodity Week right here on WILL Radio. If you can't wait, you can always pick it up off our website at WILLAG.org. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a great weekend.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.